speaker is an editor under siege, not an uncommon personality in today's media. I'm very glad to say I think he's coming out of his siege. He's always been a very strong supporter of this from the very beginning, as he was during the Gulf War. And I'm very glad to call the editor of the New Statesman, Steve Platt.
Thank you, Paul. I'm as pleased to be here tonight as I was to be here a little over 3 years ago when the launch of Media Workers Against the Gulf War kept at least one voice of dissenting opinion alive in the country at a time when the rest of the media pursued single-mindedly the one solitary line in support of that war. New Statesman at that time was perhaps the only publication in the country that opposed the war. I would hope on this occasion that we're not going to be on our own and that with your help we'll ensure that the media as a whole takes a much more progressive view on things. I was also here in this outside this hall on that occasion 20 years ago at I think much the same time of year in the run-up to the local elections when the National Front were holding a meeting in this very room. On that occasion, the anti-Nazis, the anti-racists, were outside protesting against the presence of the National Front in here. And some of you may remember that that demonstration resulted in the death of a student, Kevin Gately, who was hit over the head with a police truncheon and never recovered. Why in the Conway Hall, of all places, were the fascists allowed to meet and promulgate their views? Why here, with this great tradition of supporting socialist and progressive causes, of being on the side of dissidents, of those who are fighting for equality, and all the rest of it? And it was, of course, that argument in favour of free speech, an organisation, an institution that for so long had been on the side of dissent, that had championed so many people, so many causes who themselves been the victims of oppression by the state or by others, denying them the right to put across their views, didn't want, however obnoxious it found the views of the National Front, to see itself on the side of people who were suppressing free speech. The argument at that time is no different to the argument now, and it's as it's been put by Paul, by Seamus, and by others, that you can't divorce freedom of speech from freedom of action, and the price of freedom of speech for fascists is paid by the people who are the victims of their violence on the streets. It's paid, as Seamus has said, in death, in violent attacks, in the inability to live your lives freely, to organise freely, to exercise all those democratic rights. And I think as the basic first principle that underlies our attempt to form this organisation is that you don't extend the same normal democratic rights to those who would deny them to others. There's not an equivalence. There's not they should not be treated the same. They should not be treated as part of the normal democratic process. We had those arguments in the 1970s, and I'm pleased to say that by and large they were won at that time. The far right no longer finds it possible to organise marches at will, wherever it wants, whenever it wants. It no longer finds it possible to organise freely and openly, to call meetings, to hold its events and so on, in areas that are sensitive, in areas of black population and so on. But there are other arguments that we're having to have all over again, and I think in many ways they're much more disturbing and much more difficult to fight. In particular, we're seeing two things taking place in the media. We're seeing, on the one hand, the trivialisation of the fascist and racist threat. We're seeing people telling us that, well, it's not really that important, it's only one councillor in Tower Hamlets, you'll probably lose next time anyway, you know you are blowing it up out of all proportion. This is an attempt by the far left to create an enemy so that it can get a bit of support for itself. You're all as bad as each other. All of these arguments. Now, it may be that at the moment, the British National Party is a small organisation with one councillor in the East End of London who we hope will be defeated in the elections in May. But it's from those small beginnings that organisations such as that grow. And it's by creating the atmosphere in which those views are free to be expressed, to be promulgated, in which those organisations find it easy to operate and organise and so on, that they can expand beyond that small base, and that actually they can penetrate much more widely. And that it is all those who, not just those who oppose anti-racism, but those who, because of the colour of their skin, have no choice about it, who it's necessary, even if it was only Tower Hamlets, for us to be opposing that with all the means at our disposal. But the fact is that it won't stop there. It will continue. They're part of a general switch Europe-wide that's seeing the advance of fascist and racist views and so on. And this is the second thing that's happening, is the normalisation of those views. I've had arguments over the past few weeks with people who say to me, why do you concentrate so much on the British National Party? It's not the British National Party who killed Joy Gardner. It's not the British National Party who was interning people over Christmas because they've come from Jamaica to see their relatives and so on. And of course, they're right. Institutional racism, the racism of the state, is absolutely important. But the role of the far right in advancing institutional racism is that it creates a space in which those views can flourish. And every space that's created for the far right, every space that's created for the expression of racist opinion, helps to make those views respectable. It expands the territory. It expands the area in which that can take place, and it has its effect on policy and what happens institutionally as well. We've seen that normalisation of far-right fascist opinion take place in parts of Europe. We've seen it with the treatment of Jean-Marie Le Pen in France, where the respectful treatment of the National Front in France played by the media played a very large part in enabling them to go from a tiny minority organisation into the mass political force that they are today. We've seen exactly the same thing happening in Italy. And we can't, as media workers, get away from the important, the crucial role that the media played in the success of the right-wing coalition. It's no accident that Silvio Berlusconi is a media magnate who owns three major television companies with 45% of the audience. If my next-door neighbour had decided he wanted to set up a new alliance, and he happens to be an Italian, he would not have been able to succeed. It is that power of the media, and part of the power of that media has been to present fascism, the fascist party, the heirs of Mussolini, not as an organisation that is beyond the democratic pale, but as just one other party competing, taking part in the democratic process. In the run-up to the elections in Italy, there were television series being shown that used film of the 1939-45 war. It showed film of the execution of partisans in the fight against fascism, but it also showed film of the execution of Mussolini and of the execution of other fascists as well. And what it did, as I say subliminally, but actually quite obviously, was to create a kind of equivalence between those two events, an equivalence between fascism and those who fought it, an equivalence between racism and those who oppose it. It's an equivalence between those who suffered and died in the Holocaust, those people like Leon Greenman, who we're going to hear later, who lost relatives in the Holocaust, and those who would deny that it ever existed. And that sort of equivalence should never be given the time of day within our media. There is no space for that at all. I think there are times and there are issues where a liberal line is insufficient. The Independent editorialised that liberalism will defeat the skinheads. It won't, actually. There are times when you have to decide which side you're on. And on an issue like this, I know which side I'm on.